Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. How much do you know about where you came from? What kind of clothes did your relatives wear? How did they celebrate holidays? What traditional meals did they prepare? Engaging in the art, music, dance, and food of a people allows us to explore different cultures and sparks curiosity about the world. The act of preserving those cultural treasures makes a connection to the past by celebrating long-held customs and traditions. Our guests today are dedicated to both sharing and preserving culture. This Sunday at 5 p.m., the National Slavic Museum in Fells Point hosts an evening of dance, music, and food. Julia Solovsky is the curator of the National Slavic Museum. As a student at the Maryland Institute College of Art, resurrecting the museum located in Fells Point is at the heart of their thesis. Solovsky's curatorial work is aimed at fostering social justice and community building. Welcome, Julia.
Hi, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Katya Denisova founded and directs the Russian folk dance group Kalinka Dance Ensemble of Baltimore. They will perform on Sunday. A native of St. Petersburg, Russia, Denisova is also a science educator. She is assistant principal at Western High School in Baltimore City. Welcome, Katya.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Julia, tell us a bit about your background. You grew up in the U.S., but were steeped in Russian culture?
Yeah, so I was actually born in Ohio, and my family I'm a first-generation immigrant. My parents are both directly from Russia. I grew up what you would think is like, you would think of me as a total American based on my accent, but in reality, I hung out at this space called the Russian Center in Columbus, Ohio, and I was constantly surrounded by Russian-speaking children and friends. My birthdays were held there. And so I ended up having this really strange upbringing where my entire identity was rooted in this preservation of my culture in Columbus, Ohio.
Right. And then what took you from that to what led you to the museum space in Fells Point?
So I was sort of having like almost a little bit of a crisis. I moved to Baltimore from Richmond, and then I was almost like really missing my culture and identity. I didn't really have anyone to speak Russian with other than calling my parents. I tried to drive out to the Russian stores, but they're like, you know, a little far away. And I was just missing it. So I kept passing this place called the National Slavic Museum. And I was like, what is this? So I just decided to call them one day and actually get a hold of the owner's granddaughter, who is Father Ivan Dornick. And I was like, hey, I want to check it out and see if I can help. And that's kind of where the story started. It started with me wanting to have that same connection I had as a child, but as a young adult.
So you just said, I want to help out. What was there? What did you think you were helping out with?
So at first, when I went to meet him, I thought that I was just
this
kind
is
of
Father Dornick.
Yeah. So this is when I was meeting Father Ivan Dornick, and I met this 92-year-old man who is super cute and sweet. And I just said, hey, I'm interested. And he said, okay, let's go to the museum. And we walked over to the museum, and he opened the doors, and I see this huge hallway of just stuff, like artifacts. There's paintings, there's like little sculptures, there's tons of books, and they're all from various countries, and specifically Slavic countries. And then he takes me upstairs, and there's this like beautiful concert area with like a bar, and clearly they needed help because it wasn't open. They never had an art director or an art background. So he had the passion, but not the tools. And I was like, well, I'm studying curatorial work right now. Let me help you. Like, let me come in and start the groundwork for establishing a sustainable museum.
And you're Russian, but you hope to make a space for all Slavic people there?
So I want to honor the dream of the owner. He is from Slovakia. And when he came to the US, he kind of noticed that there is a lot of conflict across the ocean between Slavic countries. But here, every Slavic person is essentially an immigrant on some level, or first generation, second generation. And he kind of felt like there needed to be a coming together of uplifting one another and holding each other, bringing each other to power, making space for one another. And I really honor that commitment, that desire to want to actually hold a space for everyone, regardless of the conflict that arises across the ocean.
Katya, how did you come to Baltimore from St. Petersburg?
I came as a teacher. Like you mentioned earlier, I'm a science educator. I have a degree, master's and doctorate degree in physics teaching. And I finished my doctorate program in St. Petersburg in 2002. And I was looking for a teaching position overseas. And I had a couple of job offers because by then I was fluent in English and I was working on my science education knowledge. And so I had a job offer from Baltimore City Schools. And I looked at the map and I figured that East Coast is probably where I am more likely to find, people of similar stories than mine, and namely from Eastern European countries. So I came here on a teacher visa.
And why did you start the dance troupe, Kalinka?
Kalinka officially started on Valentine's Day of 2003, where my fiance and I went out for dinner, and we were served by a young lady who looked very Slavic, but she spoke beautiful English, and I couldn't really place her. And then I got brave and I just bluntly in Russian, I asked her whether she had ever been taking dance classes, and turned out that we were actually both folk dancers from Russia. She was from Chelyabinsk and I'm from St. Petersburg. And it's just interesting how we were able to recognize each other by the shape of the muscles in our legs. And also by the way our hair was braided. So the two of us got together about a week later, and back then I already had a dream of dancing. I was trying to find a group that I could join. Wasn't able to find anything that was close to what I wanted to do. And then I said, I'm just going to create something for fun, for me. And so Lisa, the young lady that I met during that dinner, and I started practicing about a week later. And we also teamed up with Washington Balalaika Society, which is a large orchestra of Russian folk instruments. We came up to their show and we said, hi, we are dancers and we're thinking of putting together a dance group and we would love to work with you. In return, they gave me a copy of their CD and they said, if you would like to choreograph a couple of dances to our music, we will include you guys in our performances. And so that was our first step.
Wow. That's Katya Denisova, director of Kalinka Dance Ensemble of Baltimore, on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Kast. Also with us is Julia Solovsky, curator of the National Slavic Museum in Fells Point. We're talking about resurrecting that space, celebrated by an event taking place there on Sunday at 5 p.m., featuring Kalinka and the folk music group Funklore. Let's listen to this clip from a Kalinka rehearsal of the Russian spoon dance. Katya, what does the name Kalinka mean?
So Kalinka is actually name of the most famous Russian tune. I can sing it to you and you'll recognize it. Would you like for me to do that?
Sure.
Под сосною, под зеленою спать положите вы меня. That is probably one of the most famous Russian tunes that anyone knows.
You're right. I do recognize the tune. I have no idea what you're singing about, though.
It's actually a song about a berry that grows in a forest. And, you know, it's just celebration of life, celebration of nature. But I didn't have to go very far because that's the most traditional Russian word.
Well, the event on Sunday is a fundraiser for the museum. It's also to buy special shoes for the dancers. Katya, tell us about these shoes.
Yeah, so Russian dance uses a lot of percussion. So we just listen to the sound of spoons, which is our way of technically communicating fun and joy, just like Spanish people use castanets. And then we also do a lot of percussion with our footwork with the shoes. They're called character shoes, the Russian character shoes. They are not sold in the United States. In American dance stores, you will find a character shoe, but it's usually used for ballroom dancing or theater productions. But the heels are too narrow, and the sound that we can get out of those shoes is just not right. So we order boots, tall boots for men, and shoes for women and girls from Russia. We send our sizes, and then it takes them about 2 months to make the shoes. And then usually the shipment of the shoes takes about 6 weeks or so. But the difficulty in the last 2 years has been that because of the pandemic, the borders have been closed, and our shoes have been sitting at the customs for almost a year.
Oh, my.
And as you can imagine, in a year, a child who was size 35, that's the Russian scale, is no longer a 35. So by the time the shoes come here, she is now a 37, and we don't have any shoes for her. So the first thing we did after, you know, the pandemic slowed down a little bit, we quickly placed a new order, as a matter of fact, just at the end of September, and we're currently waiting, keeping our fingers crossed that the shoes won't get stuck and nothing else will happen. And in the meantime, what the audience will going to see us wearing on Sunday is whatever we could find, whatever is still fitting. So our adults, because adult feet are not growing, they will be wearing the right shoes, and the children just going to wear ballet shoes or jazz shoes or whatever we could find to put the performance on stage.
Wow. I wish you luck with all that. Julia, you're hosting tours of the museum by appointment, but I understand the museum space officially will open next year.
So I've essentially prototyped a museum so far, specifically a heritage museum, and how heritage museums can include all generations, how they can thrive and be in flux and actually survive in a contemporary world. You see a lot of heritage museums aging out, unfortunately, when young people want to be a part of it. And so what I've been doing is with this prototyping, with this work, I really want to get the museum on the ground to be sustainable and open in next year. And to do that, basically, I need to have funds to make sure the downstairs has lighting. I need to preserve the artifacts. And so that's why I am trying to fundraise for myself while I'm also trying to prioritize uplifting other groups like Kalinka, which is fundamental to preserving our culture. It's not just this heritage museum. It's about that community building too.
So looking ahead, what are your greatest hopes for the National Slavic Museum?
Oh yeah, I have such dreams. So when I sit and work inside the museum, I always imagine one day coming in there and there being like various different age groups of people sitting and working and like drinking tea, just like on any day, with like a contemporary Slavic artist exhibition in the background, you know. And then I imagine like the downstairs, every item being cataloged, when in addition to having like a section of the museum where you could actually go and try to find your family's last name and the migration to Baltimore. And so I imagine all this like really lively space where conversation happens, where children grow, where workshops are happening. I want the space to be the Russian center for other people. Like how I recollect this memory. I want people to recollect memories of that when they're older.
Katya, what would you like visitors to come away with from the performance on Sunday?
Couple of things, I think. I think the understanding how vast the country is, because we go into show dances, costumes, and music from various regions. And so, you know, to learn that costumes from northern and southern parts of Russia are very different, and so is the music. We also go into a show, a couple of numbers from the neighboring countries. We're going to have a Ukrainian polka, Belarusian dance. So I guess the geographic appreciation, understanding of how vast the Slavic cultures are and how different they are. And the other piece is how powerful dance can be in the job of uniting people. You're going to see that Kalinka currently consists of about 50 dancers, ages 4 through 46, of a variety of techniques, variety of backgrounds. We will have two groups of children who just began taking classes in early September. So for them, it's going to be the very, very first debut on stage. We also have high school children who've been with us since kindergarten. And since then, they've been taking a lot of ballet classes and really working on their techniques. So they are professional dancers quality. And we also have adults who are amateurs who come to socialize, to have fun, to exercise, to keep themselves in shape. And we welcome folks of any background, regardless of their connections or lack of such to Russian culture or Slavic culture. So I guess I would like, you know, for the audience to feel our passion and our love for what we do.
I actually, when I first saw Kalinka with Katya, I actually cried because it was like so beautiful. And I brought my three American friends. And Katya, you know, you had that impact on them. They saw, you know, and it was really like, it meant a lot to me that your work showed them my culture and that they experienced it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of our goals. You know, we try to move away from politicized conversations about boundaries and borders and political regimes and stereotypes and, you know, folk culture, folklore, dancing and music and costume. It's all about people, and people are people, and then they're the same no matter where they live.
Well, thank you both. Thanks for sharing those ideas with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Katya Denisova directs Kalinka Dance Ensemble of Baltimore. Julia Solovsky is curator of the National Slavic Museum. On Sunday, at an event celebrating Russian culture and tradition, Kalinka and the folk band Funklore will perform. It starts at 5 p.m. at the museum at 1735 Fleet Street in Fells Point, Baltimore. We've got more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break and then a Stoop Story. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.